Or you're watching or listening to Sal and Soul Brothers and Sisters Hump of the Week 7 at 7 Archive Interview with Robert Kirby of Robert Kirby Hair Salons.
Good evening, Sal and Soul Brothers and Sisters. We're here tonight for another Hump of the Week 7 at 7. I'm so delighted that my good friend from London, Mr. Robert Kirby, has granted me an audience with him. Because myself and Robert met on different paths. We were both in the trajectory of climbing the management levels in PM. But let me go back to a little bit about this amazing man. Robert started his career at 13. Spoofed about it. It wasn't that we employed in Ireland. If anybody's out there listening, we didn't. That's 35 years ago, and what a career Robert has had. It's taken him from a very, very, one of the biggest in the country, Peter Mark, in the early days, to move then to several different salons as he found the right fit and the right salon for himself. Then he decided to take himself off to London to join Sassoon, which we all know Sassoon's, you know, still are at the forefront of the key. If you educate in Sassoon's, well, then you know your work's good. Spent 4 years there and decided to come back. Then worked for Neville Russell, worked around, and then eventually management came calling and Peter Mark had a great opportunity. And that's when myself and Robert's paths crossed for a while, and we both managed Peter Mark salons and enjoyed our time with an amazing company. And then Robert decided it was time to go all alone, and had the Robert Daniel salon in Finglas. Then 7 years later, you made a massive change in your life and you went off to London again and worked for the amazing Umberto Giannini, an amazing man and taken from us way too early. You had a franchise there. You then put everything into it, lock, stock and barrel, and to be a franchisee. And then the nasty recession, which I remember all too well.
Yeah.
2007, 2008, which could have done a lot of us older. And I think any of us that survived that have come out of it much stronger and much better business people from the experience. And you nearly lost everything. Then he went and joined San Riz. And in the speed of this man's, you know, will and determination, and just how good his work is, climbed the ladder very quickly to be an international educator for San Riz. Doing hair of the stars, you know what I mean? Andrew Lloyd Webber, Barbara Streisand, today just a couple of people. Moving on from San Riz then, it was time for Robert Kirby to be Robert Kirby in his own right. And along with his husband, Matt, they've created Robert Kirby in Belham in London. And most recently, 2 years now, I think, Wimbledon, correct me if I'm wrong when we get into this,
Robert. Yeah, 2.5 years now.
He's an international educator for ID Hair. And really, really helps the Danish company with all aspects of promoting the brand globally. So, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Kirby, international award-winning entrepreneur, welcome to Sal and Soul Brothers and Sisters.
And thank you for having me, Greg. It's really an honour as well to do this, because it's great, you know, being Irish as well. You know, I love flying the flag for Irish hairdressing. And I always say to people, you know, I learned my hairdressing in Ireland, you know, but I perfected my craft in London. So it's great to be on tonight.
So let's kick in with your 7 at 7. So the very first one, what possessed the 13-year-old to choose a career in hairdressing?
To be honest with you, Craig, I think hairdressing sort of, I didn't choose it. It chosen me to be a hairdresser. You know, from a kid, my family always said it. I was always, you know, playing my hair. I just loved hair. That's all I can remember is hair. And, you know, like most Irish mothers or whatever, my mum had her hair done every week, and I was the youngest of the family. So I was always brought with her to get her hair done. So I just loved going into a salon. I loved the buzz of it, everything. And then my brother, when I was about 11, he met a hairdresser. And like that, you do all the family hair at home and all that. And I used to sit there watching her blow drying hair. So by the age of like 12, I asked for my Christmas presents. I asked for hair dryer and brushes and all this stuff. And I don't know if you remember Shape and Hair, that used to be in the ILAC Centre.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I used to walk past there because my grandmother lived in town and I went to school in town. So I used to go past there and I knew everything I wanted. So I got all these brushes and this hairdryer for Christmas, and then I was blow drying neighbors' hair. That's how much I wanted it, you know, because I was quite lucky when I was younger, I'd see something and I could pick her up. So I used to blow dry my mom's hair then and my sister's hair. And that was back in the day when Farrah Fawcett was in and your Breeze blow dries. So, you know, I was just wanted to have like 20 brushes in the hair. So when I was 13, I really wanted to do it. And I kept saying to my grandmother, I really want to be a hairdresser. I really want to be a hairdresser. Because in school, I liked it, but certain things I didn't like. So if something didn't interest me, I was bored. So I remember one day, I remember when I was around 13, I went to Peter Mark in the Arlex Centre. And I asked, was there any jobs going or whatever? So they told me to come for an interview, and I met Des, as I always call him.
Des Murray.
Yeah, the godfather of management, because, you know, he was a big part of my beginning.
Gandalf, I call Des, Gandalf.
So when I was like 13, I decided I really wanted to be a hairdresser. And I kept saying to my grandmother, you know, I really want to be a hairdresser. I really want to be a hairdresser. So she kept saying, well, go and try and get a job. And if you like it, then I'll speak to your mum and dad about it. Because my dad didn't want me to be a hairdresser. He was a builder and he wanted me to sort of follow in his footsteps. And you know, when we were going into hairdressing at that age, you know yourself, Greg, you know, being a hairdresser, there was always the stigma with us. So I don't think my dad wants me to go through that. So anyway, I went and met Des, and I didn't realize you had to be 14 at that time to get a job. So I lied and I said I was 14. So I used to go to the Alex Center on late nights to work, and then work on a Saturday. So basically, you know, I'd go from school, go to my grandmother's house who lived in town, and change into my clothes, put a hairdryer and all that into my bag, because I thought I was going to be blow drying hair. And I would go into the Alex Center to work. And it was so funny, because even then I wanted, because you had your shampoo basins and then you had your neutralizer basin, and I hate washing hair. So I wanted to get onto neutralizing basin. So I actually lied and said I could neutralize perms, which I couldn't. Sorry.
And for those of us who know perming, know that the neutralizer was the make or break part of the deal.
I know.
The bad neutralizer meant the hour's work beforehand was gone.
Yeah. So I was always that way. Like you say, can you do something? I go, yeah. And I wouldn't. And then I would go to someone and say, how'd you do that? Do you mean? So I was always wanting to learn. But sadly, when it came to my apprenticeship, Des didn't have any apprenticeships at the time. And yeah, as you know yourself, back in the day when we were, you know, in especially the 80s, it's not like now where you can't get assistance, you know, it's really hard. But then you had lots and lots and lots of people. Yeah. So there was only so many apprenticeships given out. So Des sent me down and he says to me, well, we have an apprenticeship in another Peter Mark salon. So what about if you go there? So it was from beside where I lived. And I was like, okay. So I was like, but how am I going to tell, you know, my parents, you know what I mean? Or how? So my dad went to London at the time to do work. So I was like, okay. So my grandmother says to me, don't worry, I'll talk to your mum. Okay. So I basically forged my parents' signature in school to leave.
We're not recommending any young person does that now.
But I did. I did that back in the day. And I said it so I basically spoke to my mom and she said, okay, well, I'll go and speak to your school. And I went, no, there's no need to. I've done it for you, you know. So that was something I was told never to tell my dad. So I basically went and I started my apprenticeship in Peter Mark, and I basically worked with the wrong manager at the time. She wasn't good. She basically told me that I would never make it as a hairdresser. I had no talent. And I believed her at the time, you know, but I was so determined that I wanted to do this. I went then to a salon group called Main Street Hair Group at the time, which was in Liffey Street. And most of the people that actually worked there, they all worked in London. So it was a really great vibe of a salon. And it was where you could be creative. And that's when I really realized that I wanted to be creative in my training. So they taught me a lot, but sadly the salon closed down. So originally I was born in the UK and my parents lived here and I had brothers that lived in the UK. So I decided to go to London to Vardar with Sassoon. So luckily I was working around the time when Annie and all that, those people and Tim Hartley was there. And they actually offered me a job at the end of it to come on board as like a sort of an assistant, because back in the day, Sassoon was 7 years training, not like Dublin 4 years. So I had to come in as an assistant and sort of restart over again. But I didn't care. I just wanted to be there in the salon. So I worked there for nearly 4 years and then decided, you know, I was homesick and I wanted to come home. So I landed back in Dublin.
So you had your, we know where the career went when you came back to Dublin, but leading into the next one, which would be, you know, your career with Peter Mark as a manager then. But what, when did the point come across when you said, it's time for me to open my own salon? Or what made you think, you know what I mean?
But I think, yeah, when you're, it's like, you know, when you're a hairdresser and you care about what you do and your clients, and as you know yourself, Greg, when you worked in the salons and the way your clients get treated or the it's not done a certain way that you would want it done. And that's when I decided, you know what, the only way I can have perfection in my mind was to have my own salon. And to basically do it my way and to treat my clients the way I wanted them to be treated. And so that's where I sort of moved myself then to go into to have my own salon, basically, yeah.
And that was it. Where that was your Robert Daniel salon?
Yeah, so I opened up in Finglas, and you know, I was quite lucky, you know, I had a big clientele at the time. So I just says, you know what, if I open it and you know, if it fails, at least I have my clients. So, but you know, I had it for 7 years, nearly in total. But I got to that stage where, you know, when you're a salon owner, and especially when you're young as well, you just don't, you know, you think you know we're all. And I think it was a learning process for me in terms of going forward to where I am now. I made a lot of mistakes. You know, I had too many staff, you know, all that stuff. So it was a great way of learning where I am now for the mistakes that I made previous in the business.
Yeah, I suppose we all become the happy fool that we're fooling ourselves, that once we're cutting the hair behind the chair, that the money is coming in, and we don't realise that the holes in the bucket where it's all running back out the other end.
And as well as I think sometimes, Greg, you know, when I look at my salons now, the way I have a boutique salons instead of having bigger salons.
Yeah.
When I had my first salon, you know, I had probably 7 stylists working for me at the time. And I had, you know, loads of assistants and a receptionist and some day weeks, because back then you got paid by the week. And, you know, sometimes I looked at the wage bill and I was like, they're getting paid more money than me, but I'm taking all the money in.
Yeah.
So what the hell's going on? Do you know what I mean? And my accountant sat me down one day and he was like, you need to break this down. You need to cut less staff down. And, you know, and you'd like that you're afraid to do it because you don't want to lose the staff in case someone walks in the door. And, you know, so it's like a wheel that you're constantly turning and turning.
The hamster on the.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So I'm going to move on. Then you decided to head back to London, close Robert Daniel down.
Yeah.
Umberto Giannini, what made you choose Umberto Giannini?
So basically my brother, he has a lot of friends that own franchises and different stuff like that. And at the time, my brother, he lives in the Midlands in the UK. And he was saying to me, why don't you come over and set up, you know, because I had sold my house in Dublin and I had the money in the bank. And why don't you come over and meet up with this brand, you know? And I had heard about Umberto Giannini back in the day. You know, his work was amazing. You know, he was sort of like, he was there before anyone else in terms of his avant-garde work.
Yeah, yeah.
So I met up with his ex-partner, and she basically wanted someone to come in originally in the salons to manage the Bullring, which was their flagship store in Selfridges. So I sort of came in there as a troubleshooter for her, really, to sort of turn the business around because the business wasn't doing well. And so I was taken on as like a person, you know, to sort of like make the business work, but sort of work with the team as well in terms of education. So I worked alongside with other brands in terms of L'Oreal and to sort of get their standards up in the salon.
So then, because I'm going to lead into the next question, I was just figuring out the best way to actually say, because you've had so many stops, like some people have started, you've had such a varied business, you know what I mean? You've gone from being an employee to an employer, back to being an employee, back to being an employer. So that hit that you got when you took on the franchise from Umberto Giannini, you know what I mean? Where was the drive to say, right, Robert, you're not done here? You know what I mean?
So I think a lot of it, Craig, when it all happened, when I opened the salon and the recession hit, I always wanted to have this three-story building, in terms it was a Victorian building, beautiful three-floor level salon, all this stuff. You mean, that was my dream. So I thought I got my dream. But, none of us knew what the recession was going to do to us. So when I took on the Umberto Giannini salon and then it failed on me, it was such a hard time. It was a really dark time in my life, if I'm being honest with you, because beforehand, when I worked in Dublin, I never had to do a trade test anywhere. I went from a salon and they were like, when can you start? Do you mean? So you're knocked down, like you're everything about you, you're like, what did I do wrong? Because you blame yourself. Do you mean? Because, and then suddenly you've no money in your bank account. All I had was a car that I had to sell to have money. And, I have a brother who is in investment and different stuff like that. And I'm the youngest of the family. So when you're the youngest, you're always like being told, even now I'm 50, they still tell me what to do sometimes And I was waiting for him to say to me, oh, it's your fault, or you failed, or you went too extravagant. And he just says to me, Robert, you've done nothing wrong. This is not your fault.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, actually, it wasn't my fault.
Yeah. Robert, So I was similar. We'd expanded, gone to the second salon, out there. And I remember having that conversation with my accountant, who's a client of mine, saying, Your ego is a very dangerous thing. And she said, where are we going here, Greg? And I said, it could do serious damage to your health, your family, the whole lot. I said, I think it's time to call it a day and go back to being one salon and let's pick up.
But I think it's like everything, Greg. When you're a failure,
you kind of felt, I'm a failure. But the wheels came off the world. It wasn't their fault, you know?
I know, but sometimes I think as hairdressers ourselves, Jermaine, it's like, you don't want people to say you're a failure as well. Do you mean you want to, give this thing that everything is great and everything's going wonderful? And sometimes it's not. It's real life. Do you mean sometimes it's not your fault? I've seen so many salons opening in areas and you think, that will do really well, and it failed. Do you mean it's not because the hairdressing was good, was bad or anything. It's just, it's not the right place at the right time. And that wasn't the right time for me, but when I went forward,
so that leads me into the next question, lovely Robert. Is go back to the young Robert Kirby. What was the 50-year-old Robert Kirby, since you told us your age? 50-year-old Robert, what advice would you give to yourself? And what would
believe
you
in myself?
Believe in yourself more.
Yeah,
so have more self belief.
Yeah, because I think when I was younger, I didn't believe in my talent. I didn't believe in myself. I was very much always, because a lot of times people, when they meet me first, they always say, you're very, I'm a quite shy person till I get to know people sometimes. And, as I got older, I sort of came out of my shell. And, sometimes people think it's cocky, but it's not. It was just me being doubting myself as a person, which is, and I think a lot of times in Irish families as well, it's like, if you come home and you say, because you look at America children or, other countries, like, they push the kids to be this, like, I'm amazing. Where in Irish culture, we're not really, your parents weren't like that. Do you mean?
Your place. That was your place. Oh, you're doing so well with that. Leave that alone. You're doing well done,
Yeah. And you have children yourself. So you will push your children and push them to where they want to go and tell them how amazing they are. But back in the day, it was like, okay, you have a job, you know, you come home and you don't moan about it and you get on with it. Do you mean that's, I came from family, you know, my father was a builder, he was a hard worker, so was my mom. And that's how I was brought up. You know, it's like tough. Do you mean get on with it?
Yeah. So now moving on, because this one I'm really interested in. What you feel, because like your career has taken you to some great salons, some salons that maybe you thought were going to be great when you got there, they weren't so great. No. To having what I know now, because I've been in the salon in Belham, and I know the when you say boutique, and I know what you're working for. It's like Chris Moody dropped the word boutique in. He likes owning a boutique salon, and I think it might be something that the industry will savor more and might be the survival, is that we look at the boutique as being boutique because not bigger isn't always better. So what do you feel makes an amazing salon?
I think what makes an amazing salon is like everything is happy staff. That's one of them. I think amazing salon is the clients when they come in. You know, because when you walk into a salon, I always want, you know, because you've seen my Belham salon. So what we wanted to create with the brand was like a house. So when someone comes in, they feel like they're at home. So they're not in the salon environment, or they can feel
like... dog sitting in the reception.
Sorry? Yeah, I know.
Dog sitting looking at the clients waving at the dog coming in. I remember sitting there going, seriously?
Yeah. And that was actually a really big selling point for our salon because, you know, where our salon is, you know, there's a lot of dogs, people around, and we have a dog shop beside us, and clients just loved it. Do you mean that, you know...
I couldn't believe it myself, you know?
Yeah, no, so it was really good. But I think what a great salon is, everyone has their vision of what a great salon is. Do you mean, you know, some people have a great salon where they walk in and it's like everyone is chilled out and they have a great laugh. And then other people think when it's more professional, it's like everything is down to what you feel and what your brand is. Do you mean what makes a great salon?
Yeah, and I think that what your point is really is that if you look at the population and you look at the demographic of everybody out there, there's a salon for everybody.
Oh,
you
decide,
well, what salon am I creating and what type of people am I looking to cater for? And there's no right or wrong answer to that.
No.
It's what you feel as your self-confidence and your experience. This is what I'm worth. This is the clientele I'm after. These are the type of people I want to work here. And these are the conditions I'm working under. And that can be in London. It can be Finglas. It can be, but you have to be realistic as to what you're asking for and understand exactly what the market
but
is.
But one thing, Craig, I learned from my grandmother, who I was really close to, but she used to always say to us growing up, like my grandmother lived in Manor Street in Dublin, and you know, and I went to Brunswick Street, but my grandmother used to say to us, it doesn't matter where you live, it's how you live. And I said that to some people in salons, you know, you can have your salon in the middle of wherever, Sheriff Street or whatever in Dublin or in London, and really, you know, places that before wasn't looked on as being a nice place. But if your standard is high, it doesn't matter where your salon is. Do you mean?
Yeah.
You can have your standard high and yes, be a lower price, but still sending out great work and having a lovely salon. Do you mean? So it's not where you live, is how you live, basically. And that's one thing that my grandmother always instilled in us, that you have standards. So you can live in a council or whatever it is you live, but it's how you live inside that door.
That's a great answer, Robert. Next question, because I'm really interested who you're going to show. Mentors, we've all got them.
Yeah.
Who would you look back and say, yeah, he's a mentor or she's a mentor or they were a mentor for you?
So I have a friend of mine, her name is Kayla Kilshaw, and she used to run a product called Ego Professional, which you probably remember. So she used to make drawers and straighteners and all that stuff. So when I basically was at St. Ritz, you know, because I eventually came to London and then I joined with Tony Rizzo, and basically, you know, after 7 years being there, I decided that I wanted to do it on my own. And she was there behind me and she was like, not saying to me, leave St. Ritz, but she was like, I'm here to help you. And, you know, anything that you need to know. So when I became, you know, on my own, because I remember the first day of opening, you know, sorry, leaving St. Ritz and going, shit, I'm on my own. Do you mean? Because when you're part of a collective in terms of with a group and then you leave, do you mean? So I had someone then to step in and say to me, no, this is okay to feel this way, you know, because, you know, it's like everything in life. We don't want to make mistakes. We don't want to go back to the way we were before and saying to ourselves, oh, I've done this again. But, you know, in terms of mentor, she's my mentor. But I inspire to a lot of people in terms of you know, in business, for different areas in terms of what they do.
Well, actually, I'll bend the question a little bit then. What do you think makes a good mentor?
I think someone who listens and is realistic, basically. Because sometimes, you know, like, as you know yourself, Greg, when we worked together at PM or we went on these management courses, and you just listen to these guys talking and you go, oh, yeah, okay, you've come from America, you know all the stuff, but have you actually ever run a salon?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you mean, and sometimes...
Michelle, I want to know what your credibility is. And
yeah,
are you actually
it's great to...
on a daily basis, because you and I know, as we spoke, how the industry changes very, very quickly. And running a salon, like, I know for a fact, I could not run my business the way I ran it 20 years ago. It doesn't mean 20 years ago it was a bad business. It's a different time in a different way, you know? Definitely this year has shown us all that, you know?
Yeah. But I think a mentor, as what you were saying, is like everyone gets inspiration. Like, you know, you were saying you start picking up reading and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm always on, you know, podcasts, or I listen to certain things and I get inspiration from different people. But I know myself, I have about two or three friends that if I need advice on business or stuff that I want to do or thinking about, I would ring them and get advice. And they will tell you straight to your face, you know, instead of going, making it all lovely to me. Yeah, because sometimes we can get into this bubble of like, you know, oh, this is wonderful. But you need someone to say to you, cut all this thing out and this is the reality. Do you mean? So, yeah, I put around people around me that is going to tell me the reality.
Right, well, then that leads us lovely into 2020, the year that none of us expected, okay? And I find what I found has got me through this was at the end of each day looking at glass half full moments. So since we reopened, I know the closing and the lockdown was different in the UK to here, but since you got reopened, I know this is another lockdown, but I think this is different because we're more prepared. So what are some of the glass half full moments you might have learned from lockdown, from reopening, or, you know?
I think, you know, I had a business plan about, you know, when I opened Robert Kirby London, you know, 6 years ago, I had a plan to have four salons. And, you know, we opened Wimbledon 2.5 years ago. The plan was to open another salon this year. We have taken that idea off the table now.
Yeah.
And, you know, looked at my salon in terms of, you know, what is the best for the Robert Kirby brand. You know, I have in each of my salon, I only have a minimum of four stylists in each salon now. For the reason is because those stylists need to be at their full capacity. I don't need anyone sitting around. Mm. You know, I need someone who's going to come in, they're fully booked every day. Because what you were saying a bit earlier, Greg, about having a bigger salon, you know, originally I thought about, oh, we're going to have a big salon, but we decided, no, we're going to keep it small, you know, keep it very boutique style salons. And, you know, because I had the big salon before, I opened a big salon in Bertigianini that had 27 seats. Do you mean? And I realized that.
Right, let me just pause you for a second there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, as I was saying to you, like, you know, I had the big salon before and I managed, like yourself, big salons as well. So I decided I didn't want a big salon again. I wanted, and what you were saying earlier, Greg, about salons, you know, that are big, and especially now in the UK, there's so many salons. People want to rent chairs, you know, people are going mobile, and that's affecting some of our businesses, especially here. I don't know in Ireland if it's the same, but, you know, I decided by keeping a smaller team, we can control the brand properly and, you know, give the clients what they need. So we do a maximum 7 to 8 clients a day. We will not do any more than 8 clients in a column. You know, built a really big color brand in terms of the two salons. So that, you know, most of our work is color basically. So, and that's where I learned from the previous experience I had when I had a salon, what I went wrong with, and that then moving forward to this brand, I knew where to go into with the color, how to make the client more happy, the experience of the clients. So I look at the past history as good because it taught me a lot.
Yeah.
But going forward, you know, I brought my mistakes, and I'm the first person to always say to people, you know, because I do get people sending me messages on Instagram and Facebook and saying, you know, I love your brand and I love this and I love that. But, you know, we're big fans of TK Maxx. You know, we'll go into TK Maxx and buy nice cushions and nice whatever. I'm not afraid to tell people where I buy my stuff. Yeah. Do you mean?
And that's just good business savvy, Robert.
But it is, but I think as well as, you know, we all have been there, Greg. You mean, and yeah. Especially for younger people coming up the ranks into salons, you mean, because it is hard. You mean, you know, when you open a salon and, you know, I just paid a massive VAT bill, do you mean, for you know, after going from 6 months of lockdown, you know, 3 months to 4 months of lockdown, we did like 6 months of business in 2.5 months. So suddenly you're left, you know, and it's all these different things. But would it stop me from still running my business? No. You know, it sort of makes me stronger. But going ahead in terms of the 2021, you know, the plan was...
That leads into our last question.
Yeah.
See, I love it when I say it, we want to keep giving and giving back the story. Sometimes I have to say, oh, hold on, let me lead in.
Yeah, I know.
The last question on your 7 at 7 is, what would you like the future to hold for Robert Kirby and Robert Kirby's business for the next 12 months in 2021?
Okay, so part of my business is the education as well. So, you know, I do work for a brand in Denmark, but I teach a lot of their people that come to London. So I really want to get back to teaching again, because that's where my passion is. Mm-hmm. You know, the salons course, that's what makes my lifestyle that I have now. And it pays my mortgage and everything else that goes around. But I just think, you know, 2021, I think a lot of us have learned from lockdown of, you know, our clients. And, you know, I have so many clients that have sent me, you know, emails or messages saying, you know, can we pay for, you know, when we didn't get our hair done in lockdown, but we want you to stay in business. And I think that is so nice. I've learned from clients of mine who are so demanding. And I'm like, well, you're at the bottom of the list now. Do you mean for the when we reopen from
this is a closed group for salon owners, so you can say.
Yeah. But I think as well, it's great because your staff as well. You mean, I've been really lucky. My team, you know, they have all been great, you know, because they're all still in contact with us. You know, they're, you know, they want to get back to work. And that's the great thing that makes the great salon as well, is that your team are.
I think the one thing that scares me a little bit, and I know from friends of mine in the US, the way Booed Rental and Rent a Chair and the massive, Chris Moody was saying to us there a few weeks ago that, you know, it's 59% of salons in the UK are Rent a Chair. And he feels there's still a place for the boutique salon. Because I would always feel it's not everybody wants to work for themselves. It's not always as nice as they think. And I think having a bit of structure and control and a standard and what Robert Kirby means and what the guests feel when they come in, what they expect, that doesn't happen in a rent a chair. Now, in Ireland, I don't know, our government is slightly different on it. Maybe we're a little bit tight at times, aren't we, the Irish people? Who can kind of go. And, you know, from Gandalf, our Des said to me a couple of years ago, I don't think the government will allow rent a chair come in here, Greg, because I think the law here says that even if you're renting that chair, you're still, as the rentee, you're still accountable for that person paying the tax.
Well, you've seen that there was a landmark,
you know?
Well, there was that landmark thing that happened in the UK where the girl who was meant to be renting a chair sued her ex-employer because she says that she was still working the 40 hours, she was still doing that stuff. So she won her case on that. The reason why, you know, because Matt has said it to me in the past, because I do get people asking, can they rent a chair with me and all that? And I just say no, because that's not for my brand. You know, I'm a bit of a control freak. I've got OCD when it comes to my salon. You know, everything has to be perfect. And, you know, if I had someone who was renting a chair coming in when they felt like it, you know, leave them when they felt like it. You know, want to bring their own brand products in. You know, like my brand in my salon is fully brand of one brand. That's it. There's no other products in the salon. So that is my thing of, if you rent a chair, where, you know, where the rules are going to step in. And I just, no. I have friends who do it and they think it's great, but no, I prefer to imply my team. But, you know, the thing that's affecting us, and especially me, there's so many home hairdressers, especially in the UK, doing hair. And I think that's something that I would like the government to step in. Yeah, so the English government's like, you know, what I would like is, you know, that, you know, for people that are doing hair at home, and some people have children, I get all that thing. But if it's affecting our businesses, you mean, it's a bit like the black market, you mean? And that to me is a big issue in our industry, that kids are coming out from college or training in salons, and they're suddenly, oh, I'm going to make loads of money at home doing hair. So they end up losing, and we're losing these people in our industry as well to do home hair.
Yeah, we're facing a very, very big crossroads, and so, because I don't know what it was like here, but over here for the long period, you were getting €350 a week off the government to stay at home.
Yeah.
Of course, I think most people did because of the fear factor. Now, this second lockdown, I think, is a little bit of a farce. You and I have said this off camera, because life seems to have gone on a bit normal around us, other than hairdressers, boutiques, pubs, restaurants have been totally decimated and left aside. And what's happened is, though, there's going to be employees in our industry, especially, like, let's face it, you can't be a home chef. So you're not going to go and start making people's dinners and bring them to their houses. So in our industry, I think what's happened now is, I guarantee you, there's a lot of hairdressers out there. I can wear the mask. I can stand. They know the things to say, and people are going, it's okay for you to come into my house. So what we need to do is get back to work from this lockdown. Make clear the hair salons, these are the guidelines you follow. This is what we're doing. If you follow them, you're allowed open. If you're not following them, I'll be the first to say, no, shut the salon down if they're not following the guidelines. They're not doing the things correct, shut them down. But if you keep opening and closing us, you're driving people away, because you keep giving them a nice few bob for doing nothing, and then they can go out and make another few bob. So there's no encouragement to come back to work full time in your salon.
And that's the thing, Greg. And I think, you know, Jenny, if I'm allowed to mention people's name, like, you know, I was one night on Facebook and I seen Jenny Crawford, and someone was giving out about money, you know, saying about, you know, I'm working hard and I do home hair and I'm not getting any help from. And Jenny says, okay, if you're doing things, then can you please put up your company's name and we all can check what you're paying in? And I thought it was the best thing. I was just like, fair play to you. Do you mean, because, you know, we're all paying our VAT bills. We're all struggling to pay our tax bills. You know what I mean? And, you know, the government in the UK have said to us, okay, you can put it, you know, back for 3 months, but you still have that bill at the end. So yeah, you need to,
is the term over here. You can warehouse it for 12 months here.
Okay.
But in 12 months,
what happens in 12
months? You better have that money put aside to pay it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the reality. Like, I know landlords is a big thing that I find, that there are some good landlords, there's some landlords that are negotiable, but I'm hearing stories now of people agreeing terms of rent, like half rent or whatever, and landlords coming back and saying, oh yeah, you owe us the half rent now. And the impression they were was that, no, I thought I was paying you half the rent while I was closed, but I didn't owe you the other half. And now the game is changing, and that's where the governments will have to step in and say, sorry, you can't. Because technically, we've signed our leases. We're legally bound to pay this. But this has been an unprecedented year that nobody could have faced this.
Well, I have, like, my two landlords, when it, you know, came to lockdown, we sent them an email and they basically told me, I've got our bills to pay as well. We weren't looking for, you know, we weren't looking for anything, you know, free rent, you know what I mean? Because we all have to pay. People stop paying their bills, Greg, I think, you know, everyone's going to get in trouble. Hmm. But we wanted, you know, because I had friends who were getting 10% off their rent. My both landlords were like, no, we want our full rent. You know, so thank God the government gave us 10,000 for each of the salon to cover, but it didn't cover all my rent, but it was the help and I was grateful for it. You know, but it's still really, it's hard. Do you know what I mean? So I think in Ireland where the landlords were told you had to freeze the rents or whatever, in the UK, that didn't happen. We had to pay our rents.
No, they didn't freeze the, they did, there's no evictions, but I think it was more on people being evicted from their homes, right? So
Sold
in business. In fairness, the government here have put a lot of stuff in place. A lot of stuff, and they have. But the wheels sometimes can get clogged. And from the public, the government's putting it out there that we're doing all that, but you're hearing stories of people going, but I didn't get it. I didn't get my PUP payment. I didn't get it. And that's down to, like, I have a term that, see this remote working. It's not working because people working off their kitchen tables expected to do the job 5 days a week. It's not going to work because people in our human nature, we're a group animal. We perform better and always have
done. It's like anywhere, And you say you're Irish.
You're a busy man and you're getting ready to open like us soon. Oh, you've opened, sorry, because we're pre-recording this. You've opened and you're in the height of Christmas. So I'm going to let you sign off, Robert, because I've been really, really grateful. And it's always a pleasure chatting to you. Because
I
just always find that you're somebody that really, you're a deep thinker and you think long and hard about your industry, your profession. And I admire what you've done with Robert Kirby in London, because I've been to Belham and I've seen it, and I someday hope to go and share a glass or two of wine in Wimbledon, because the last time I went to Belham, I think we fell out of the salon.
I know. And the good thing about the Wimbledon, we have a really nice garden, so we can have a barbecue out there.
I'm there. I'm taking you up on that. So listen, Robert, I hope you, Matt, all the team at Robert Kirby, have a great Christmas. And
you too. And you have a great Christmas too.
Back in the home country.
All right. Thank you.
Cheers, Robert.
Thank you for listening to our archive video with Robert Kirby of Robert Kirby Hair Salon. If you've enjoyed the interviews, please like, share and subscribe to our channels and our pages. We look forward to hearing from you and we look forward to you giving us a 5-star review. So keep the faith and see you all again soon. Take care.